The next day, Valentine accompanied Lambert to the CO's office. Bloom stood there, her files tied up in three big waterproof binders by her adjutant. She walked a little stiffly, but kept the cane as more of an affectation than because she needed it for moving about the office. They exchanged the necessary salutes.
Fort Tsang is yours, Colonel Lambert. What's left of it, anyway. Still wish I knew what they did to me when I got all scared. I never once the whole time felt my mind was not my own. I was just dark and depressed about everything. Doubtful. If that ever happens to you, tell somebody right away.
How are you to know?
Hell of a way to fight. Make someone get so beat up about themselves they start thinking about taking their own life. I'd rather be shot at some more.
I understand that.
What ifs, you know? What if I could have been stronger? Or figured out something was wrong with me? Does it make you not crazy if you recognize that you're sick in the head? I remember knowing I felt different. I thought I was just cracking under the strain.
You did better than anyone would have expected.
It was beautiful for a minute, wasn't it? When we showed up and found the Green Mountain Boys there. Colonel Lambert, you know you did all that. Too bad you couldn't have seen it. Oh, that was a good day.
They fooled me just as much as they fooled you. Wish I'd been a little more careful.
Valentine wondered if his repeated request to Southern Command for assistance to be sent to Ankaa's coal country guerrillas figured into Lambert's calculus when she'd decided on Javelin as Southern Command's next venture into the Kurian zone. She knew Valentine, trusted him. Had he let her down? Maybe that's why she'd been so formal of late.
I think the Green Mountain Boys were happy to see Southern Command arrive, too.
It's still the spot Javelin landed, as far as I'm concerned. I think we'll be back. One day. I'm sorry, Val.
Not your doing. I know you'd have stuck.
At least everyone's rested and refit. We'll make it the rest of the way.
Easy.
I'd settle for hard. One twist away from impossible, even. Just so long as I get them home.
Valentine stepped up beside Lambert to watch the last remnants of the brigade move out of camp under an iron gray sky. The soldiers moved in step, a rarity for the men of Southern Command, unless they were moving as part of a graduation class or parade review or under a general's nose. Valentine expected the Kurians would let them return across the Mississippi. The Kurians liked to see defeated men live to tell their tales. It was the ones who'd beaten them they went after. Men like his father. It was hard watching the men he'd come to know on the long advance and the longer retreat file off down the road. Of course, the few volunteers stayed on, some technical staff, communications people, and trainers helping transform the Quislings into something that could stand up to the Kurian Order. Even Gallaby, the agronomist, had remained, waxing enthusiastic about learning more about legworm husbandry. He had some kind of idea about putting a special bacteria in the legworm's digestive tract and getting concentrated fertilizer from the other end. But while he put droplets into petri dishes and ran chemical tests, he advised Evansville on how they could do a better job growing their own food without the rest of Indiana to rely on. Pencil Bolnitz also stayed, and Valentine wasn't sure how to feel about that. The supply train, artillery in tow, had left that morning, leaving only the rear guard. Red Dog, exhausted, plopped down in the sun.
Guess he's here to stay.
You ready for this, Dots?
No.
Too bad.
You're helpful.
I'd be a lot more worried if you were more confident. What's my first order, sir?
Is that Bloom's car?
Looks like it.
Bloom hopped out, hauling with her a Kentucky Vol, short for volunteer, a local who served in the loosest, most disorganized militia imaginable. Their only common element was a dark blue band around their baseball-style caps. Valentine smelled blood on him.
What's going on here, Colonel Bloom?
The Kurians moved already. They didn't waste time. We aren't even out of camp yet. I'm sorry I've got to leave, passing you bad news. Evansville just hauled this guy out of his boat.
Where?
Tell the Colonel, volunteer.
It slides out for Evansville and Owensboro. A bunch of flying wutzits have taken over the power plant, and some reapers and moondaggers are holding the technical guys hostage.
The banks of the Lower Ohio. The Greenwater Infrastructure Support Plant on the Ohio River, the former Elmer Smith Power Plant, dominates the skyline for miles around. Or rather, its smokestack does, a weathered two-color pillar that resembles a Louisville slugger, once produced a few score miles upriver, from a distance. The plant is active and confused only on days when thundering mountains of coal are unloaded. Once carried by barge, they're now brought by Kentucky's dilapidated railroad on captured trains, and irregularly at that. The Kentuckians break out the old joke that these colors don't run anything but short. The river is much changed since 2022. First called by the Frenchman who explored it La Belle Rivière, its banks are now coated with arteriosclerosis of trash and industrial waste. In more prosperous days, the river carried a weight of cargo equal to that which passed through the Panama Canal. Coal barges, oil, mounds of chemicals, white or gray or sulfur colored, grain, corn, soy, tobacco, and of course steel returning from the coal-fired furnaces of Pittsburgh. The Currian Order still dredges the river, off and on, to its usual main channel depth of 9 feet. It maintains the locks that control the river as it descends the 500 or so feet from Pennsylvania to the Mississippi junction at Cairo, where the few local grog traders are careful to correct your pronunciation to Cairo. Now, in the warm water outflow of the plant, tough carp and catfish survive the acidic, polluted river. The bass keep to their willow roots, stumps, and snags in their cleaner stretches of bank. At this time of year, with the temperatures sinking lower and lower at night, fog runs along the river most mornings, sending querying fingers into the riverside ravines. The foggy wall represents the new state of affairs along the river. Much of the north bank outside Evansville belongs to the Currian Order, the south bank to the Kentuckians. When once they exchanged jokes about wool-headed Hoosiers and barefoot Kentucky hillbillies, now the locals steal and shoot. But around the power plant, the fog seems to cling extra thick, a shroud that suggests the unwary would do well to keep away. They took the Vol, who was named with a string of three personal names for first, middle, and last, John Robert Nicholas, into the main building, where members of Valentine's battalion were lugging boxes and setting up duty stations. Lambert escorted Valentine and the Vol into her bare office, where a single box sat on her desk waiting to be unpacked.
I want you to get him. You Southern Command people know how to deal with critters like that. We can make the soldiers jump when we have to, but this is beyond anything we can do without tanks and cannon and such like. Don't belong on God's green earth, them things. You kill him, right, Major?
Private Colonel Lambert's in command here. Tell her how you ended up here.
That bird outranks that palm tree. Right. I forgot. Our big bug is a senior sergeant.
Well, she outranks everyone on the base, Private Nicholas, so you're speaking to the right woman. Tell us what's going on.
Valentine went to the coffee pot, an expensive-looking plug-in model with silver handles and gold rings at the top and bottom that had probably been found in the house. Lucky it wasn't sitting in someone's knapsack. Or maybe it had been, and Bloom rescued it. In any case, she'd left it full of hot, delicious-smelling coffee for her successor.
I'm to tell you that y'all have a safe conduct pass out of Kentucky and back to the Mississippi for the next 48 hours, after which the skies themselves will fall on you. Those were the tall boy's exact words, sir. Thank you, Major.
Now that you've passed the word, tell us what happened at the plant and what exactly attacked you. We need to know as much as you can tell us about what and how many and where they are.
Well, six I saw. They came in over the fence like... No, I should start at the beginning. I was part of the 10-man security team. We do 3 days on and switch and get 4 days off, then 4 days out, you know.
Yes.
Just there to keep an eye on the river, you know? We had an op up the smokestack. We could see the Owensboro Bypass Bridge on one side. Only bypass bridge still up west of Louisville. I suppose you know, sir. And Evansville on the other side. Luckily, it wasn't my shift to be up on top in the wind this morning. At dawn, everyone got called out to look up because there were these big things. Like birds or bats, only bigger than any turkey vulture you could even imagine. They were circling around the top of the stack. I think they drove Burke out. He started climbing down the outside ladder and they just harried him and he fell before he got to the first perch rest. He fell and made a mess. Spun as he came down and hit head first. We all ran inside after that and were looking out the windows to see what they were up to when the tall boys came over the fence. Now that the plant's mostly automated, the people who work it just do maintenance on the machines and watch the load. Never as much as the plant was designed to make, at least these days. That, and they work the loaders to keep the coal flowing. Several people on that full time. But those big fellers just came in and killed two of us right off the bat, and another jumped on Sergeant White who was just trying to get away. The others herded us like dogs into the cafeteria and closed all the shutters. We just crowded in the center of the room while they circled. You ever had one of those things nipping at your heels, ma'am?
No. All the Reapers I've seen have been dead.
Let's hope that record remains unbroken.
Well, for no reason. One just reached out and grabbed the fuel man. At least I think he was. He was covered in coal dust. It fed on him. Got blood everywhere. I'd seen finished up bodies a couple of times, but this was the first time I'd seen one eaten in the flesh. It's a horrible sight. Most of us turned away. Figure I owed the poor soul that, you know. Someone said his name was Dewey.
How did you get the message to give us?
Well, after the one ate that poor Coker, he grabbed me. That's where these bloodstains come from, his hands. The big pale bastard held me close like he was gonna dance with me.
It's all right, Private. Go on.
So the Reaper looked me in the eye and spoke, splattering flecks of blood on my face. I washed it off in the river, of course. Told me that you had time to quit Kentucky. 48 hours to leave with the rest of them. Of course, they had a message for the Evansville folks, too. Then he carried me out like I was a toddler and chucked me in one of the commute boats the power plant workers use, and I got to Evansville as fast as that motor would take me.
What are their demands to the Evansville people?
Well, an exchange, they call it. Evacuation to Evansville. Anyone who wants to leave will be free to go into Kentucky. Then the South Illinois Currians move in.
I thought Evansville belonged to the Ordnance Cur.
Must be some kind of deal they worked out.
I don't know politics. I just wanted out of there.
They spent a few more minutes questioning Nicholas about numbers, and then they had him sketch out a map of the plant to the best of his ability. After that, they sent him to the small base hospital to be examined. Lambert called her first staff meeting in the dining room of the big house. Moitana was there for the Wolves, waiting with the remaining platoon until Southern Command could send a replacement. Gamecock represented the Bears, and Captain Ediak the rank and file of Valentine's Battalion. Patel had charge of the base in the operations room. There seemed to be no getting rid of his former sergeant, for which Valentine would be everlastingly grateful. Brother Mark slipped in, looking tired and a little wild-haired. Valentine wondered if he'd been sleeping the previous night's party off.
I was hoping to make this a friendly get-together, but the Currians had other ideas. Word's probably gotten around the camp that they've moved against us already.
Yes, terrible bombing.
Bombing, Brother Mark?
The conference in Elizabethtown. All the Legworm clans sent representatives from the big towns to work out which way Kentucky's going to go. Franklin, Lexington, and Paducah aren't represented there except by members of their underground. The town's been hit twice already, so you might say Kerr is being represented after all. We're not sure if the planes should be part of Quorum Call or not.
There wouldn't be a flying rattlesnake on the planes, would there?
How did you know?
I ran into them in Dallas and again when I was out west. They're a remarkable organization. They can fly everything they need to a location, set up a small airport, and operate for as long as you can feed them fuel and munitions. They even can build simple bombs and so on if you give them high explosives and scrap for bomb casings.
Brother Mark, we're dealing with a separate event. The Currians have seized the power plant that supplies Evansville.
Which Currians?
Illinois, south of Chicago.
Why should that matter?
Mr. Gamecock, I'm surprised you don't...
It's a binary problem with me, sir. Currians are either dead, and therefore not a problem, or alive, in which case I'd try to make them dead.
There's more to it than that. To the Ordnance Cur, their Illinois cousins are practically enemies of the same degree as the people in Kentucky. To their minds, they're handing the city over to some neutrals. The Ordnance wants the traffic on the river flowing free again. The Ordnance doesn't have much in the way of brown watercraft on the Ohio. They have boats from the Great Lakes, but they couldn't bring such substantial vessels to the Ohio without cutting them up into sections and reassembling them. and the rivermen in Memphis and Louisiana don't feel like raking the ordnance's nuts out of the fire.
Who's dumb enough to stick their nuts in a fire, I want to know.
Chestnuts. It's a phrase going back to...
Enough! Let's get back to the situation at hand.
Southern Illinois is no threat. What forces they have are busy guarding against grog raids out of the hills between the Ohio and the Mississippi. And the rest keep an eye on St. Louis. We could do worse. If the ordnance decides to send that armored column, which that red-headed wildcat claims is assembling and training there, into Evansville, well, we wouldn't be able to stop many more than the local leak cutters.
Evansville has a hospital, workshops, manufacturers, horse farms, refineries for both ethanol and coal oil, factories even. Never mind the agriculture. We need all that. I'm not inclined to give it up.
All those hospitals and factories and whatnot won't be much good if they blow up the power plant. You don't just pick up megawatt generators, you know.
All the more reason to get them back.
How do we do that against dug-in reapers?
With enough covering fire, we can blow them out.
Nah, my guess is, despite wherever the hostages are, most of the reapers will settle in near the generators or electronics. Something we can't replace easily. Major, according to your vol, they're holding all the hostages in the workers' cafeteria.
Logical. Easy to feed them, big enough for everyone to stay in one room, under observation. Warm and cozy.
Packed in like that, a reaper or two could kill them all in under a minute.
One problem. All those windows. We could put 6 bears in that room in less than a second through those windows.
Wolves can keep the gargoyles and harpies off our backs. Bears take care of the reapers. Power plant is back in our hands.
If we can trust the map, someone needs to make a close reconnaissance before we plan anything. For all we know, this is an elaborate trap. Get all the bears inside the place and blow it to hell. I think they want us to hit it. They probably got the whole place rigged. A ton of dead technicians. Lights out in Evansville and Owensboro. And the resistance takes the fall.
They're not that logical.
Doesn't hurt to act as though they are, Eddie Eck. I'll ask Smoke about getting over there and taking a look tonight. She'll need transport.
Better get her over here. Where is she?
My quarters.
Lambert picked up the phone atop the table and gave instructions. Most of those at the table found something interesting in the woodwork.
My wolves will drive her. Light duty truck, something inconspicuous.
Any way we can get a twist on them?
Put the Whirlpool plant to work making generators.
It's something more immediate.
There might be an easier way than assault.
Head back to the Mississippi with the rest of the brigade?
No. Who's running those reapers? We need to find the Kurian. Take the mastermind out of the equation and the whole thing will fall apart.
He could be anywhere. We know there's no tower around, so it's probably hiding. When a Curry wants to stay hidden, they're next to impossible to find.
I don't think so. He has to be near enough to the plant so he can control his reapers day or night. Their range is limited to 12 or so miles by day, maybe less. Kentucky is thickly wooded and hilly. He needs a high perch for good transmission.
And one well guarded. Let's not forget what chicken shits they are, sir.
Duvalier. Colonel?
Where on the river on the Ohio side is there a garrison, Smoke?
That's a pretty empty stretch, especially with Evansville in revolt.
I say it's in a boat. All it has to do is go over the side.
In this weather? Kurians don't like cold. I think it would kill them. No, it's holed up. Brother Mark, could it be in the river somewhere? They look aquatic.
That I don't know.
I was in a sort of park that recreated their home planet, not Kerr, which I think is warmer. It was quite warm with shallow water.
Boat still seems likely. Mobile.
No, it's high up. If it gets in trouble, it just launches itself into the air. They can glide for miles. What makes you say that, Ediac? I heard before I defected over. A friend in the underground told me he'd seen one glide away from a fire they'd started in his tower. He sailed off like he was in a glider.
The bridge.
What bridge?
The new bridge that people in Owensboro call it. Just east of the city. Suspension bridge with 2 high pylons.
Too easy for us to get to.
Not necessarily. Both ends are guarded.
I crossed it a couple weeks back, north to south. I had a picture of a moon dagger and some letters claimed I was looking for them. Smugglers bribe their way across all the time. One of the smugglers told me that it's actually harder to go north to south than the other way. Going north, they just check to make sure you aren't bringing weapons and ask about your business.
No, the Kurians don't want their Ohio populace slipping across the river any more than they want Kentuckians visiting Ohio. That Kurian can get high enough so it's got a clear view of the power plant. And the bridge and the power plant can't be more than 10 miles apart, I don't think. Clear line of sight, that is, not by road. Escape by air, escape by boat, escape by highway. It's perfect.
Just guesswork. You know how many old Kraken towers and water tanks and cell towers we've hit because somebody theorized that a Kurian just had to be there? All we came away with was a lot of rust on our gloves and bird's nests. I still say we wait for good strong daylight and take out the Reapers. A Kurian's just a big bucket of ugly without his walking teeth.
Not guesswork. Our scouts have seen some new uniforms on that bridge recently. We've been paying attention because of this armored column reputed to be up from Bloomington Way, and it's the only intact bridge within 60 miles of Evansville. We keep a close watch on it through a telescope. And there are some troops in big woolly overcoats that showed up, all tall men in winter duty hats. They don't do anything. They just keep an eye on the ordnance regulars. They look like high-level security types. It'd be easy for a Reaper to look like one from a distance, especially at night. He just pull his hat down, turn his collar up. Now, we thought they might be there to clamp down on desertions or make sure smugglers aren't bringing necessities into Kentucky, but maybe not.
They worked out the details of Duvalier's reconnaissance, and Moitana took her out to find a pair of wolf drivers for her. The nights were coming earlier and earlier, and they wanted to get her to the power plant by nightfall. While Duvalier was off scouting the plant, Valentine spent an hour with his rifle and a weighted satchel on his back, training in an old grain elevator in Evansville. It had a similar loading escalator that Valentine thought similar to the suspension cabling on the bridge, though the bridge's was larger and more graceful looking. He did a good deal of climbing on the inside of the elevator in the dark, getting used to the feel of hanging and climbing and resting. Then, when his muscles couldn't take the load anymore, he practiced balance work, using the gun as a balancing pole. Duvalier returned the next morning, exhausted and smeared with coal dust and rust streaks. After everyone had gathered again, she gave a somnambulistic report, correcting a few details on the Vol's map and delivering the unwelcome news that a platoon of Moondaggers now occupied the power plant as well.
How do we get the Kurian without it getting away? In the time it takes my bears to fight their way onto the bridge, it could escape.
We don't even know it's there. And even if it is there, it will in all likelihood be presenting itself as a garbage can or a loose wire hanging from a floodlight.
Not in this weather, I don't think. It'll be inside where it's warm.
I might be able to find it. There's just one difficulty, however. It would have to be communicating with its reapers. Or even better, feeding.
Is that all? You let me in the plant again and I'll arrange that.
How?
I'll know that when I get there.
When will we attack the bridge? Strong daylight?
No, we'll need dark, with no moon. The bridge is too well guarded for anything else.
I don't like breaking up my bears, sir. They're too used to working together as a team.
You won't have to. That bridge is a job for a whole regiment, which we don't have. Or one man. If he's there, I'll get him.
Val, the last time you went off on your own wildcatting, it took me and a town full of grogs to get you back. Let me go.
No, you're going to be busy at the power plant, getting it back in one piece.
They worked out a plan involving Duvalier, the wolves, and the bears creating a diversion at the power plant, while Valentine and Brother Mark made a try for the Kurian on the bridge. The big basement in the Legion House, as the men were beginning to call it, was something of a treasure trove. Besides a spare generator and the new communications room, inhabiting what had been before then a wine cellar, the precise climate control equipment was kind to the electronics and the operator. It had an old bar that was now filled with boxes and odds and ends of the previous occupants, arranged like sedimentary layers in an archaeological dig. There were a few holdovers from when it was a nature center, glass cases and displays. Valentine planned to empty them and return them to the lobby behind the main doors, where they could post javelin memorabilia. Above that were the stored clothes from the owner and his family, elegant suits and dresses too delicate for his men to make much use of. Then above that were piles of Moondagger clothing, uniforms and slipper-like footwear, and odd Kurian icons, the most artful of which was a wooden frieze of the curve of the Earth's surface in near silhouette, as though drawn from a picture taken from orbit, with a great nail like a railroad spike driven through it. The spike had curious etchwork in it. Valentine would have to have Brother Mark take a look at it when things calmed down and see if he could make anything of it. Valentine found an interesting, richly woven Moondagger outfit that looked part prayer robe and part dress clothes and part military outfit. It must have belonged to some high-ranking Moondagger, judging from the beautiful knitwork around the collar and seams and cuffs. It had an attractive cummerbund or waist wrap, he wasn't sure of the word, of a flexible material like a bandage that had numerous zip pockets. Inside, Valentine even found a little ordnance currency. Valentine had sought some decent attire from the ex-owner's wardrobe, an outfit suitably impressive and redolent of status, but the Moondagger robe uniform might serve even better. Luckily, it didn't smell. Some of the Moondagger stuff was now rank and musty beyond belief. With his clothes selected, Valentine and Brother Mark had worked out a rough timetable. It was a cloudy night, as had become usual as November wore on. He and Brother Mark put together a small truck and a canoe, tying it in the bed and on the roof, and looking for all the world like they were departing for a fishing trip. It was a bumpy drive with Valentine, Brother Mark, and a wolf corporal at the wheel. He knew the roads, trails, and railroad cuts for miles around, and promised to get them to the other side of Owensboro, a town that was still more or less neutral. Wolf scouts had gone into town, overcoats thrown over their uniforms, but weapons carried openly, and eaten at a diner with ordnance soldiers at another table. They both paid their bills with ordnance currency. Kentucky might be semi-free, but it was still integrated with the Kurian Order economically. Discussion about the quality of the apple pie available in Owensboro or the amazing coffee at the Hitch had to be curtailed when they parked above the river. Valentine and the wolf scouted and decided that they were near enough to the bridge to make it a quick trip, but far enough to avoid observation from the guards. Valentine and the driver set about untying the canoe, while Brother Mark set out food and thermoses. They were all in for a long, cold night. The wolf set off to put the canoe in at the riverbank.
Cold night, Major Valentine. So much for our long, lingering summer.
Indian summer, you mean. Indian summer's a good thing, especially up among the lakes in Minnesota.
The Quisling guards didn't have any dogs on this side. Valentine was thankful for that. He'd heard barking up on the bridge at the guard change and briefly worried about patrols. The bridge itself was elegant, a delicate-looking road bridge. Two tall pylons, one at the north end, one at the south, supporting the bridge with a series of cables. They looked rather like a pair of matching spider webs, Valentine thought. The cables weren't tied to bigger main cables, such as in more famous suspension bridges, such as the Golden Gate. Instead, they all linked to one of the two supporting pylons.
You near enough?
There's a Kurian on that bridge. That's all I may determine.
What does it feel like?
How do you mean?
The mental impression they give. Is it a voice or thoughts?
It's like a chill. An open window on a still winter day in an otherwise warm room. Like the heat is leaving my body and flowing toward it.
I just need to know where to go.
Somewhere high is my guess. They can sense longer distances that way without the clutter of animal and vegetable life.
Valentine looked at the riverbank. The Ohio was lined with refuse, mostly bits of plastic. Bags, cracked bottles with blocky lettering advertising energy and stamina, cartons that looked like they were meant to hold eggs, chunks of foam clinging together like the chunks of ice Eliza hopped across to escape slavery. There'd been a saying among the workers at Xanadu in Ohio. He'd learned it while digging ditches. Flush it in the Ohio, and it washes up in Indiana. Valentine had taken it to mean that the less competent of the Northwest Ordnance were given duties in Indiana, but it appeared that the phrase had a literal truth to it as well. Owensboro, across the river, slumbered. There were burnt-out ruins on the north side near the older of the town's two bridges. The closer of the two had long since collapsed, or been destroyed to simplify the border between Kentucky and the Indiana portions of the ordnance. The new bridge was a little over a mile to the west, linking a bypass road that ran around the edge of what had been the suburban part of the old river town. The wolf had told him that Owensboro was a lively little town, popular with shady traders who brought Kurian Order products into Kentucky and returned with legworm hides, crafts, tobacco, bourbon, and marijuana. The big conference center, practically in the shadow of the old bridge, was still intact, the site of a bustling flea market on Market Saturdays every other week. Valentine searched the bridge with his eyes. He found what he was looking for, even without Brother Mark, a little cocoon-like structure high on the north pylon of the bridge.
There. What's that?
Ah, a temporary. That, my daring Valentine, is the Kurian equivalent of a hammock tent. Or the Kurian is very small and very young. A new bud off an old sire. Where else would he get multiple Reapers?
Is he there?
I think so. There's some activity. As I said, it may be young, but it's able to control multiple Reapers at once. It must be a prodigy.
All the more reason to kill it when it's young.
Savage.
It's the truth, savage or no.
Morning comes, Major. Better get on with it then.
Valentine changed into the black Moondagger robes and thick wool socks. He didn't have a beard, but if he tousled his hair just right, it gave him a mad Rasputin-like air that went with the Moondagger apparel. He didn't have the little curved knife many of them carried either. They were prized trophies for Southern Command's soldiers. The robes had plenty of room in the sleeves to hide his cat claws on their breakaway twine.
Go back to the boat, Mark. If you see a lot of shooting without the flare going off, just head back for the other side. If they loose the dogs in the woods, head back to the other side. If I'm still alive, I'll figure some way back. Hopefully through Evansville. I'd rather not swim in this water if I don't have to. We'll have a frost by morning, judging from this wind, and I don't want to die of hypothermia thanks to wet clothes.
I'll do what I can to confuse matters.
You'll do nothing. The Ordnance Bridge guards are professional soldiers. I broke through a sentry point once, and they chased me across half of Kentucky.
No, I was referring to our friend in that oversized wasp nest. I have some abilities where our Kurian friends are concerned. And if it's an inexperienced mind, I may be able to keep him occupied so you can approach him unaware.
I'm glad I decided to bring you along.
Further proof that I'm good at what I do. Hurry along now, daring Valentine.
Brother Mark was a man of deep waters, if he was a man. Valentine was beginning to wonder if he was in fact a life weaver. But he didn't have time to think about it. The bears were scheduled to hit the power plant in 2 hours, or when Valentine sent up a green flare. He took his Type 3 out of the horsehide sleeve. With his cat claws already tucked into the wide sleeves of the Moondagger uniform robe, he set off toward the riverbank. Valentine considered trying to bull his way through with his brass ring and the Moondagger outfit, but it looked like the sight lines for the guard posts covered the entire bridge. If he passed one, they'd be able to see him all the way to the other. Plus, there was a shadowy figure in the middle of the bridge that Valentine knew, without a doubt, was a Reaper. Undoubtedly there to guard its master Kurian and its nest high above. So, the easy way was out. A Reaper, when alert and aware, was the most dangerous thing on two legs walking the earth. The eyes, ears, voice, and appetite of their Kurian, the avatars lived off of the blood of their victims. Terrifyingly strong and juggernaut tough, they were almost impossible to sneak up on, as they could sense a sentient mind nearby. As they fed, they passed vital aura, spiritual energies Valentine only half understood, to the puppet master animating them. After feeding, the Reaper sometimes lapsed into a half-awake state. Some believe the Kurian became either insensible in the manner of a drunkard or preoccupied with savoring the vital aura. That was the time to strike. Or during daylight, when the sun's energy interfered with the connection between Kurian and Reaper. If he couldn't go up from the top of the bridge, he'd take the bottom.
Damn.
It looked like he'd have to get wet after all. The Kurians and their poor habits when it came to keeping roads, bridges, and utility lines in repair served them badly at the new bridge. They'd strung power lines along the side of the bridge to bring electricity into southern Indiana from the Kentucky plant. Valentine took his shoes off and tied them around his neck, and then waded out into the river and took advantage of cracks in the cement bridge pilings to climb up to the power lines. Luckily, the high voltage lines were well insulated. Valentine dangled from the line by his gloved hands, swaying in the funneled breezes under the bridge as he moved out over the river a few inches at a time. It was exhausting business, and soon his fingers, forearms, and shoulders burned and screamed. He was now well out of the security lights around the roadblock at the north end. He quickly rolled across the pedestrian wall on the bridge and dropped to the side, pressing himself into the shadows, and lay like a dead thing. He quieted his mind. The only way to get past a Reaper was to camouflage yourself, body and brain. The first thing he'd been taught after becoming a wolf was how to box up much of his consciousness and tuck it away for safekeeping. Breathe in, breathe out, letting go of worry. Breathe in, breathe out, giving your fear to the air. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. Your body is nothing but a puff of air, flowing invisibly across the landscape. Valentine lost himself in half-remembered poetry. Gone were all things wise and fair descend, moving toward that high capital where kingly death keeps his pale court in beauty and decay. Breathe in, breathe out. He watched the Reaper. There was something robotic about its motions. Was the Reaper idling? Perhaps the Kurian was concentrating on his Reapers at the power plant and ignoring his guard below. The Reaper passed, and none of the bridge guards was eager to approach its perimeter. Valentine noted that in its passing, the Reaper's foot slapped the pavement of the bridge. One of its boots was missing the sole. On the other, the heel was flapping. This Kurian didn't take very good care of his avatars, or it had just moved far fast. He looked up at the Kurian's nest. There it was, like a spider's egg sac in a hayloft, high and tucked out of the weather. Sometimes it pays to take the hard way, Valentine thought. Valentine jumped up to the suspension cable junction with the bridge proper. He went to one of the suspension cables and looped a utility worker's harness over the cold steel. He moved up the cable like an inchworm, but it was a cold, bad climb. Numb fingers, couldn't feel his toes, aching arms and back. He rested at the top, arm looped around a defunct aircraft warning light. Now it smelled like bat guano. Off to the east, he could see the power plant, lights illuminating the smokestack. Valentine had seen Kurian cockle shells before. All he knew about them was that the paper-like material they were made of acted as both structure and climate control. For all he knew, it was living cell material, some creature with no more ability to move or alter shape than an orange. This odd bubo on the tower was about the size of a compact car, perhaps the smallest such residence Valentine had ever seen. He had considered bringing explosives on the venture, but the angel food was tricky stuff to work with, and Southern Command had departed with the good electric detonators. He might have to climb both ways, only to have his bomb not work. Valentine fixed a length of climbing line to the protective grid on the pylon topping light. He descended toward the Kurian's enclosure, rope looped around one leg and his waist. The Kurian's nest was also a work of suspension. Two corkscrews of the odd material anchored it to the top of the pylon. Valentine slipped on one of his cat claws. The material was much tougher than it looked. It was like trying to cut wet nylon with a butter knife.
What the hell?
It was like someone had put a wet leather bag over his head. Seeing stars from it pressing against his eyes, he realized it must be the occupant. Valentine had never been this close to a Kurian before. He couldn't fight it without letting go of the rope and plummeting into the Ohio. If he reached up with his cat claws, they'd go right through the Kurian, and he'd wind up scalping himself or worse. Consciousness filled with gluey sludge, he felt himself go dizzy and lightheaded. The Kurian was taking over, denying him the use of arms and legs.
Out! Out! Out!
Seeing stars, hardly knowing which way was up, Valentine felt his stocking foot slip.
Oh! Oh!
And he found himself upside down, suddenly free of the clammy cold bag. Something below spun as it fell through the night. The Kurian, looking a little like a torn scarf with sewn-on legs as it dropped lifelessly toward the river, pushed by the wind rather than riding it. Valentine realized he was dangling by one lucky loop around his leg, innervated and confused. Valentine swung his leg, retrieved the rope with his hand, and hung again by two hands. Where were the damn rungs? Other side. Valentine didn't so much swing as roll to the other side, feeling with stocking feet for purchase. Finally, the steel rung was in his hand, and he could think again. Valentine wondered what the goddamn thing had done to him. It felt like it was still hanging there. He waved his hand behind his back. Nothing. Despite the ladder, getting back down wouldn't be so easy. Valentine was caught in the horns of what Duvalier had called the assassin's dilemma. Early on in his training, she said that any fool could walk up and kill a target, provided you learned enough about its habits and grounds. The pro knew how to get away clean, or if not clean, at least alive. If he fired the flare from here, it would certainly be seen by the observers at the power plant, but the troops on the ground would wonder who'd fired it and why. But he couldn't delay until he could creep away. It gave more time for the hostage takers at the power plant to figure out why the Reapers were acting so oddly and react. No, Gamecock's bears had to strike, and soon. But Valentine had an unexpected ally. The Reaper, suddenly undirected and fearful, froze, looking this way and that. Did its master Kurian's final mental state, assuming they felt anything so prosaic and human as fear, remain in its brain psyche the way a flash left a white echo on the retinas? The Reaper rushed toward the guards on the Indiana side of the bridge. Unfortunately for the men there, they were the closer contingent. The first man it reached, it just knocked aside with a sweep of the arm that left its victim turned around like a broken doll and twitching. It grabbed a man seated in a small triangular armored car. Was Valentine's crouched image, the last thing its master Kurian saw, reminiscent of the guard's position? And pulled the man out. Valentine checked his equipment and began his descent. Equilibrium and energy slowly returned, and he dropped the last 10 feet to the base of the bridge. Soldiers from the south side of the bridge were nervously peeping over the lane divider, watching the Reaper hunt their comrades like a loosed dog in a chicken run. Valentine snuck up next to an ordnance officer.
You just gonna stand here and let your men get shredded?
Waiting for... Who the hell are you?
I'm with Vengeance 6.
What the hell's Vengeance...
Moondagger Special Operations.
Then where is the beard and dagger?
It interferes with the disguise.
That is a nice Atlanta Type 3. But I thought all you Moondagger types were issued Ordnance Columbus Assault Rifles.
Captain, have you ever dealt with a rogue? They're unpredictable and very dangerous, worse than any rabid dog you ever imagined.
Glad to have you, but I'll need to...
Almighty, man. The thing's killed two of your men already and destroyed one of your vehicles. Let's work out who's subordinate to whom later. I need some light. A sudden burst of light always confuses them. Send up a flare, would you?
Sir, where did you come from?
New Universal Church School, Utica. When I point up, fire the flare.
Well, who are you to be...
Look, if you want to try to corral that son of a bitch, be my guest.
After you, sir.
Valentine trotted up the side of the bridge toward the north side, which was like a disturbed anthill as the ordnance soldiers ran this way and that. Only three men stayed at their station, a group at a machine gun covering the roadblock on the bridge. They swiveled the muzzle of their weapon to aim it at the Reaper. Valentine put his Type 3 to his shoulder and knelt. He positioned himself so that even if he missed, he wouldn't strike one of the few remaining ordnance troopers on the other side of the bridge.
Flare! Now!
The Reaper, bathed in a green glow, froze, startled. The heavy round struck the Reaper squarely on the butt. Valentine doubted the bullet penetrated more than one layer of the strong, unearthly weave the Reapers used in their robes.
You with a machine gun, open fire!
Their target, probably frightened by the sudden light, pain, and noise, flattened itself under the fire and scuttled north like a crab and sprang off the bridge with an uncanny jump. It cleared 9 feet of Indiana side fence topped by 3-foot loops of razor wire, landed, and disappeared into the darkness. The men with the machine gun tracked it, their tracers chasing it off into the night.
You're in a hell of a lot of trouble, buddy. I was relying on you to put at least one round down its throat.
That thing was going nuts! What was I supposed to hear?
Now I have to chase it down in the goddamn woods. You know how dangerous that is, going in the woods after a wounded, pissed off rogue like that?
You want us to sick the dogs on?
No, they'll just scare it. I'll have to hope it calms down enough so I can get a decent shot. For Kerr's sake, keep your men out of those woods. We had enough blood for one night.
Yes, sir.
Get that gate. Unlike Jumpin' Jack Slash, I can't drop 60 feet and take off running. Is that a box of defensive grenades? Give me 2.
Yes, sir.
There's a good man. You never know.
Valentine hung the grenades on the Moondagger cummerbund and trotted off down the road.
Open the gate and keep those dogs out of the woods.
He felt strange pity for the Reaper. What it remembered of its existence as a puppet of the Master Kurian, Valentine didn't know. Would it be worse to awaken, confused and pained as a newborn, to a world of bullets and explosions all around, and instinctive hunger that needed feeding, or to suddenly have control over your body again? Or was it something in between, where the Kurian gave his avatar ideas, needs, and desires, and let it carry them out with a little nudge now and then, or a few words bubbling up out of the subconscious? Valentine and Brother Mark rode back across the river, fighting the downstream current that threatened to carry them within sight of the bridge. It would be light soon. There was a little highway stop with a good roof that the wolves used to keep an eye on the bridge. They could warm themselves there and have a hot meal that would refresh them for the slow, bumpy ride home.
What's that, Major Valentine?
Valentine put the oar across his thighs and looked over his shoulder. Something like a turtle's back was cutting through the current. Valentine saw a face come up for air.
That is a Reaper's head.
Oh, my.
He isn't swimming hard. Doesn't look like he's trying to intercept us. Just follow.
I see.
Valentine took up one of the ordnance hand grenades. It was the more powerful of the two used by their military, designed to be thrown from cover at an advancing enemy. Javelin had captured plenty from the Moondaggers, who used them to clear buildings.
Hold up for a moment, Brother Mark.
After a quick read of the yellow letters on the side to double-check the instructions, Valentine stripped off the red safety tape.
Well done, my man.
We'll see.
The head was still there, though it had halted and drifted with the current. It took a cautious stroke or two toward them again, letting the current put more distance between them.
Not easily discouraged.
Row hard. We're not far.
They paddled hard enough to froth the river, with Valentine steering and Brother Mark straining with the effort of providing power. They slid the canoe into the little brush-overgrown spit that they'd used to cautiously launch it a few hours before.
Lord. Oh, Lord, the thing's stalking us.
It had killed before, but not fed. Valentine saw the yellow eyes, bright with something that was probably hunger in this cold, fixed on the slower-moving Brother Mark. Valentine no longer felt sorry for the creature. The easy sympathy that came when he pictured it wandering the woods, confused and hungry, had been replaced by pale-skinned, black-fanged reality.
Anything in your bag of tricks that lets you suggest something to a Reaper? Like going back across the river and trying the hunting in Indiana?
No, Major. Nothing, I'm afraid. I get no sense of a mind there. Not even a human one.
Hold up.
Valentine put his sights on the Reaper, and it froze. It retained enough knowledge then to know what a pointed gun meant. That made it more dangerous. It slipped behind a tree.
Shit.
He had one hope left. A predator has a stronger survival instinct than most people credit it with. To the hunting cat or the pursuing wolf, serious injury is synonymous with death. If not defending young or scrapping with a challenger for territory, a predator will usually shy away from an aggressive display, especially if you can overawe it in size and noise. Of course, this isn't the case with all meat eaters. A wolverine or a bear will often welcome a fight. He handed his remaining grenade to Brother Mark.
Brother Mark, if it gets its tongue in me, toss this. They get lost in the act of feeding. You could run up and hang it off its back.
Valentine had lost a comrade in the old labor regiment that way, near Weening, the night he killed his first Reaper. Weening still had the skull nailed to the town gate. The kids sometimes chalked words under it that appealed to a teenage sense of humor. Valentine rolled up the Moondagger sleeves and slipped into his old comfortable cat claws. He advanced on the Reaper, arms spread wide. It peeked around from the bole of the tree at him.
Ah!
Valentine swept one outstretched arm against winter bare branches, stripping bark and crackling twigs.
Ah!
If it came at him, he might still live. A good swipe across the nose might blind it. The Reaper wasn't taking the bait. Nothing to do but go all in.
Ah!
Its eyes widened. It sprang away, running hard to the east up through the riverbank brush. Valentine couldn't keep up. He lobbed a rock in its direction. His aim was better this time.
Now get it!
Valentine wasn't looking forward to the walk back to the truck. He'd have his rifle up and his sphincter tight the whole way, leading Brother Mark in wide circuits around anything big enough to hide the Reaper. He had the funny feeling they hadn't seen the last of this fellow, and he'd have to pass the news to the Kentucky volunteers that there was a wild Reaper loose on their side of the river. Just what the remaining wolves and bears would want to hear after the action at the power plant, assuming some catastrophe hadn't left the grounds of the power plant strewn with bodies. They drove back to Fort Sing at a crawl, staying in first and second gear on the broken-down roads. Valentine, exhausted and half asleep in his seat, had the driver take them to the power plant first. He was relieved to see a pair of wolves step out and halt them on the last turn before the plant. They had to carefully go off-road and route around a roadblock the wolves had cut, unsure of the possibilities of a counterattack from the bridge and wanting to hold it up long enough for the bears and wolves and one unpredictable cat to escape. They found the power plant in Southern Command's hands, and only lightly damaged in the offices, where explosives had been used to drive out the confused Reapers. Valentine felt dwarfed by the immense architecture of the power plant and the towering smokestack. It seemed like a monument that would stand forever, like Independence Rock in Wyoming, or the Great Kurian Tower in Seattle.
Made angel food out of them, sir.
Chieftain, the senior Bear NCO, approached Valentine, brother Mark, and their driver. He liked to decorate his uniform with feathers of various raptors and a vulture or two. Silvertip, another bear who loved Kentucky and had decided to settle there and become a dealer in legworm leather, was partially undressed, sitting in the chill air and carefully scrubbing blood out of his studded leather with an old toothbrush.
Phew, six. Don't remember ever taking so many one day before.
Well, a ghost did that. Shut down their master. Wolf saw the flare certain enough and got word to us. We went in and found the whole place in a tumult.
Where's Allie?
Cat? I think she's sleeping in the kitchen.
I'm gonna find her. Good work here, men.
Our pleasure, Major.
There were several leather-winged harpy bodies in a pile near the gate. Not enough for Valentine's taste, but they picked off a few. There were wolves near the exterior door, all asleep with bits of a meal scattered across the floor, except one sergeant in deerskins quietly putting a freshly cleaned Remington back together.
Where's Duvalier?
The cafeteria. That way, sir.
The cafeteria had blood and black Reaper tar on the floor and a good deal of damage to the walls from bullet holes. The windows were broken where the bears had come in. Valentine found Duvalier curled up between a steaming stove and a basket of potatoes. She was sleeping, cradling her sword stick, looking like a little girl snuggling with an anorexic doll. Valentine nudged her with a toe.
Good job.
Ooh. Ah! You found the Kurian.
Where we thought he was. Just a little one.
He was hungry enough.
How'd you feed him?
With the moon daggers. It was like one of those Noonside Passions episodes I used to watch in New Orleans. I pretended to be a girl looking for her brother who was being held in the power plant, and this sergeant promised to get him back for me. The name I gave was for a dead man. Lying bastard. So he slobbered on me for a bit, and then fobbed me off on a private to take me back to the gate where other family members were waiting, trying to shout messages to the men in the cafeteria. I played up to the private a little. The sergeant saw it and got jealous, and the next thing you knew, they were fighting. Some officer priest broke it up, took me away for counseling, and he started groping me 5 minutes later. I screamed bloody murder. And the next thing you know, half the Moondaggers were fighting with one another. I'll admit, I egged it on a bit by snatching a dagger and sticking it in the priest's kidney. The Reapers broke it up and killed two of them and hauled the bunch of us into the cafeteria. Then they lost it and started running around like chickens with their heads off. Next thing I knew, the bears were coming in the windows.
Your feminine wiles have lost nothing over the years.
Dream on, Valentine. I think they put chope or one of the other church aphrodisiacs in that syrupy fruit juice they drink. I tell you, Val, there isn't enough hot water in the world to wash off the grubby fingerprints.